Dave McGrath, thank you for joining us.
This is WGTD-HD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Hello, this is Jonathan Shaler, host of this week's Education Matters here on WGTD Radio. My guest today is David Diamond of Vancouver, Canada. David, the leader, the facilitator, the creator of Theater for Living, an organization in Vancouver that has an international presence. It's based on the work of Brazilian theater director and activist Augusto Boal and others who do similar work. David has really made this work his own, as one can read in his book, Theater for Living. And I am honored to say that I have had the opportunity to work with him personally this summer for 2 weeks during one of his annual training sessions. He's expanded certainly beyond the annual training sessions in the summertime and recently got back from a 9-week tour of Europe, which I hope he'll tell us something about today. But just a few brief words on what Theater for Living is. And David, you might be better equipped than I to give the short version of this. So welcome. It's great to see you.
Hi, Jonathan. Really nice to see you. I was already doing political theater. That started in 1981 when I was a professional actor who fell in with the wrong crowd and started a theater company that was at that time called Headlines Theater. Our first thing was an inaugural play about the housing crisis in Vancouver in 1981. Over time, the collective kind of dissolved. People didn't want to do administrative work. I had turned into the person who was doing the raising of the money and the tour booking and then helping write the plays, etc. The collective said to me, take it over, the structure. And I had a question inside me. We had been doing agitprop theater, agitation propaganda theater, where we would decide what the issue was. We would then go and interview people living the issue and then lock ourselves in a room and pretend we were those people and make a play for them. And because we were young, and thought we had all the answers, we'd tell people how to fix their problems in our plays. And we were good at it. But I had a question in me. How do you do it with them, not for them and at them? I pulled some money together to go to Europe to visit different theater directors on like a quest. And before I left, I wanted something to read. So I picked up this book. I had no idea what it was. And it was Paulo Freire's Pedagogy of the Oppressed. I just liked the title. Yeah. And I'm reading it, going through Europe, and it was blowing my mind because it was answering my questions. And then I got into a conference in Manchester, and there was this guy there, Chris Vine, who is now in New York, doing a demo of this thing called Theater of the Oppressed, Forum Theater, by this another Brazilian, Augusto Boal. Freire is also a Brazilian, and I'm sitting there going, holy crap. That's what I'm reading about in this book. And Boal, who had been arrested and tortured in Brazil for his theater work, was now in Paris and was doing a skills sharing session in weeks. And the beauty of Europe, badoom, off to Paris. And Augusto and I think because I was already making political theater, we hit it off. And we went on a big journey together of mentor, mentee, colleagues, and then very, very, very dear friends. And I was doing Theater of the Oppressed work, which has quite a strict model to it of oppressor and oppressed. And then in the early 90s, I was very challenged by Indigenous communities here in Canada, who I was being invited to work with, to open up that model in a play that they wanted me to do with them on family violence issues. Mm. And, you know, we knew that there would be at least one abuser in that play. And to be clear, family violence is an issue that affects every culture everywhere on the planet. It's not something that is specific to Indigenous communities. And here in Canada, and I imagine also in the US, those issues are in many ways a product of colonialism and the theft of land and all many, many things that are attached to all of that. And they wanted me to work with them on a piece where we knew there would be an abuser in the play, but they wanted me to guarantee them that character would not be put on the stage as a monster. Mm. But rather as a human being in crisis who needed healing, and out of that crisis doing things we would never condone. Mm. And so you could hate what the character was doing, but have compassion for the character. This was very challenging for me. Mm-hmm. I come out of my own troubled childhood. And, you know, that binary model made my politics much easier. I knew who the enemy was, and it was the people I disagreed with. Mm. But they were right. And we made this extremely powerful play called Out of the Silence that I know changed thousands of people's lives. And it did so because it invited people to see themselves in the abuser. Mm-hmm. Without being, with actions not being condoned, but with understanding the context of how a human being gets there. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not born to abuse. And what it really showed me was that I was tired, in fact, even then, of dealing with symptoms. And that there was a way to get down underneath the symptom. Yes, we know there's a lot of violence in the world. Why are we growing so much violence? Mm. Down beneath the symptom and into root causes. And that really started me on a path of really changing the work that I was doing. And over time, I felt, out of respect to Augusto, because that oppressor-oppressed model and the strictness of it really left the work and became much more based in systems theory. I've had a lifelong interest in physics and changed the name to Theater for Living. And the work now, as the world polarizes more and more, is really about building bridges, not more walls. And so you asked for something short, but it's hard.
That was brilliant. Thank you so much. Yeah. And it's interesting that just yesterday I was watching Out of the Silence with my students here at the
really?
University of Wisconsin-Parkside. Yes. They are developing their own play based on issues that are important to them. They're still defining exactly what that is, but I wanted them to see an excellent example of what the Forum Theater event is, where all this is leading to. And so, yes, we watched it over two class sessions. We finished it on Thursday, and it is so powerful. You know, without going into the details, I'll just say that the backstory of the so-called abuser, the man in the play, who is acting out violently, we see into his story, and he is such a window into what makes somebody into that kind of person. And it he's not the enemy. He's somebody that we have some empathy for.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so at that time, what's that?
Over the years, I've worked really hard to be able to continue to do that in all the plays that got made. Mm. Up until 2018, when I decided to close the company. Mm. And if people are interested, all of those plays are viewable for free on the Theater for Living website.
It's an incredible gift.
At theaterforliving.com in the video section. You just have to scroll down a bit past the little speeches from me, and you'll start seeing lots and lots of plays.
Oh, it's an amazingly rich website, and you'll see the plays. But if you also want to hear David Diamond speak in detail about various aspects of his approach, that is also there. So it's really quite fantastic. And
the plays are artistically much more interesting. Yeah. Hearing me talk.
Yeah. I don't know if this is a little bit inside baseball, but hey, it's my show, so I get to ask the questions. I know from experience, from having worked with you over the summer and also from having watched some of your plays online, that one of your many talents is, as you put it during the training, you know how to bang a play together. And what happened during the training was that my group brought you some raw material. And we had, you know, we had cast the play, we had developed a storyline, we had some ideas of what the issues, the needs and the wants of the characters were, and you helped us shape that into something that would be effective for a forum theater event. And to me, that's part of the mystery and the science of what you do. I don't know if you can say anything about that. It's like asking a tennis player how he hits that incredible shot and he's never thought about it before, but maybe you have some language. I don't know.
First, though, I think for people who don't know what forum theater is, the play builds to a crisis and it offers no solutions, you know, so there's no resolution to the play. Excuse me. There's no resolution to the play. It's as if the play turns around and says, we have these real problems that we actually really don't know how to solve. And that's important to me. If you already know what the answers are, don't make this forum theater. Mm. Make forum theater about things you really don't have the answers to. And so you perform the play once, the audience can see it, and then you perform it a second time. And the second time, the audience gets to stop the action of the play. And now in my work, replace any character whose struggle they believe they understand and try to solve the issues somehow in the play. The invitation for me, the actual words of the invitation change mm-hmm. with every play. But essentially it's to try to solve the problem somehow, problems. And people do this. People always say to me, our community isn't gonna do this. And I go, I don't worry about that. People will come on the stage because we are in fact hungry to use this primal language, the theater, that, as Augusto Boal used to say, belongs to all of humanity. We are very, very, in fact, hungry to do that as communities. So to answer your question, I think that the heart of your question is the difference between issue-based theater and character, issue-driven theater, and character-driven theater. I think a lot of political theater is issue driven. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the creators of the play have put a list of issues up on the wall. And what you've got is a play that is a shopping list of issues with the characters making long didactic speeches or being in didactic arguments. And for me, I'm speaking really personally, it's just not very interesting theater. Mm. Whereas if the action is being driven by the lived experiences of the characters, so it's character-driven theater. And that means that the characters aren't ending up doing and saying things that they would never do or say in order to serve the political desires of the people who made the play to make political points. Like it's how are the issues existing in the minute lives, the moment-to-moment lives of the characters, and affecting our lives together. So that people aren't making big didactic speeches. They are treating each other more mechanically. They are not being nice to each other. They're sometimes doing terrible things that we want to blame on the system. But, you know, the systems that we think oppress us didn't drop in from outer space. The patterns of behavior of human beings created those systems, and they sustain them.
Yes.
It's not that I don't think systemic change isn't necessary. It's very necessary. But I, in fact, don't think the theater is a good vehicle to look at systems. Because the theater at its best is about human relationships.
And that's interesting.
So, you know, let's make theater about how the systems exist inside us. You know, we are born today into a deeply capitalist culture here in North America. We are born into a toxic soup of racism and all kinds of terrible things. And the idea that it doesn't exist in us is just a fantasy. We can't escape it. And so you make plays where the human beings are really struggling with those issues in order to invite an audience to come in and try to create a healthier society somehow.
Yes. Wonderful. So this brings up two more questions for me. Both, they go into two very different directions, so I'll let you take your pick. The first one is continuing on this question of how you take the raw material that your actors are bringing you and shape it into a play. I'm just, having just looked at Out of the Silence, I'm very impressed by the emplotment and how one conflict or crisis builds on the next and expands the picture. You know, the play begins with a family birthday celebration and a kind of on its face happy family gathering, and then we quickly begin to see the tensions in the family, the young girl being kind of objectified by her parents and her aunt, and then she goes out with her brother, and there's a scene outside where we learn more about them, and while they're away, we learn more about the father, who begins to tell, who tells a very deep story about his childhood and reveals more of what's inside of him. Then the children come back to the house at a very vulnerable moment for the father. And he's triggered by, this is my way of summarizing it, the disobedience of the children, or his feeling of lack of control, whatever it might be, and explodes, gets almost violent. And certainly it feels like the threat of violence is immediately there. And then the scene ends horrifically, the whole thing ends horrifically with him coming to his daughter's bedroom. And I need say no more about that. And that's where you leave the audience. So I know that you build form theater plays so that the worst thing, or the climax, or the most horrific aspect of the conflict or difficult part is the last thing that the audience sees. That
mostly,
much I know.
Mostly, but not always.
Okay.
It's not a rule.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that overall structure, just, it built so well. It works theatrically, but it also works for form theater, because there are so many moments where an intervention might be helpful. Yeah.
And so even then, and just to make people aware, we're talking about a play that was made in 1992.
Yeah.
It's a while ago. And the work actually has evolved since then. I do like to think I got better at it over time. But even then, there was this thing about unresolved arcs, unresolved moments. And so, you know, we think that and sometimes, you know, terrible things do just drop out of the sky. The thing I'm going to explain isn't a rule for everything all the time. But often the difficulties in our lives don't just appear from nowhere. They are created through tiny unresolved moments, you know. It's interesting. I've just finished reading a very wonderful book called High Conflict. That talks about all of this. I'm going to divert for a moment, you know.
You're diverting, I'm going to also divert. So hold that thought. Just want to mention that our listeners are listening to WGTD FM. This is Education Matters with your host, Jonathan Shaler. And we're interviewing David Diamond, originator and director of Theater for Living. We're talking about David's work. So, David, you were about to talk about a book that you've recently read.
Yes. So High Conflict. You and I might be arguing about this cup that I'm holding up in the air at the moment. And we can't resolve the argument about the cup. And so at some point, we're no longer arguing about the cup. We're arguing about the fact that we're arguing. And that's very difficult to get out of. And the author, whose name is escaping me at the moment, starts with talking about it in terms of marriage counseling, and then builds into being able to speak about it in terms of how gangs operate, and then into how dysfunctional city councils operate. Then, ironically, for what's going on right now, into the relationship and how between Israel and Palestine. But the concepts remain the same. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's an extremely powerful book. And it relates back to this thing that I started talking about unresolved moments, unresolved arcs. And so the plays are constructed in a series of unresolved arcs. Something happens between two characters. It could get dealt with better in the moment, and it doesn't. And it's unresolved. And that leads to something that could get dealt better in the moment, and it doesn't. And that's why you see things build and build and build and build into a much larger crisis. The tension in the plays just builds up. And so that ends up meaning that from the very beginning, there are points for audiences to be able to go, oh, wait, just a minute, stop this. Because the fact of the matter is that if we catch things earlier, they very often, in ways that we will never know, head off into a different direction that isn't, who knows, it might be a new terrible direction, that's possible, but it isn't the terrible direction that the play goes into at that time. And so you get to really turn the theater into a laboratory, explore the results of how we deal with issues in our lives, sometimes internally, but more often than not in between people, in all kinds of situations, in home life, in the workplace, in larger structures.
And when you mentioned larger structures earlier, you said, you know, you can't really represent systems on stage, but I think you have looked at the relationship between what's going on with the characters and the policies that are in place. For example, could you say something about legislative theater?
Well, legislative theater was really something that came out of Boal, Mr. Boal, when he went back to Brazil. And there's a long and very wonderful story that I'm just not going to end up telling, but he became very adore. You got to let them. To, I guess, what in the U.S. would be the state legislature. Here in Canada, it would be a provincial legislature. But he made a deal with the government. Lula was the president of Brazil at the time. And because he didn't want to sit in the legislature and listen to boring speeches. He was making theater in the slums. And he made a deal that he would not have to sit in the legislature. He would make theater in the slums about things that needed changing policy, right, legally, with laws, and then bring that into the legislature. And he did manage to create new law in Brazil using this thing, legislative theater. And so others of us who have been inspired by Augusto have tried to do legislative theater with varying degrees of success. The thing was, he was the legislator.
I see.
Right? And so the rest of us have had to convince legislators to, participate in this in an honorable way. And that's sometimes difficult to do. But yes, so for instance, there was a play called Maladjusted. How are we all being asked to adjust to a maladjusted mental health system that's become so mechanical, it's not serving anybody anymore? Created and performed, of course, as all my plays are, by people who were really living the issues.
Yeah.
So these were created by mental health patients and caregivers. And the psychiatrist in the plays, played by an ex-psychiatrist, left the profession because he was so frustrated with the mechanization of mental health. You know, it's interesting, without him, that play would have turned into a very different play, because there never would have been a psychiatrist in the play. Because unless you've got a degree in psychiatry in my work, there's no way you can play a psychiatrist in forum theater. And so that play, dealt with how the mechanization was operating in the characters' lives. And then I would be able, somebody would come and make an intervention, try an idea. It would be successful or not successful. For me, sometimes the most valuable interventions are the ones that are not successful, because we're actually now dealing with how society is working, and we're learning lots of things. And I would be able to say to audiences, this idea, how easy or difficult is it for to happen, like in a medical institution? And the answer would be, it's really hard. And I would go, why? Because the policies around mental health don't allow it, for instance. And there would be a scribe in the audience taking notes about all these things, people suggesting policy changes. And Maladjusted, we had the cooperation, when it toured, of mental health providers all across BC and Alberta.
Wow.
Including Alberta Health Services, the major medical government institution in Alberta, who took this thing very, very seriously. And so, yes, Maladjusted on a grassroots level, not on a uber government level, changed mental health policies. After Homelessness, created and performed by the homeless population here, which also I'm proud to say won Outstanding Production of the Year at the Professional Theater Awards, created and performed by homeless people.
Fantastic.
Who had never been on stage before in their lives.
Wow.
Also helped change the policies here in Vancouver around the distribution of food. You know, we throw out massive amounts of food that could go to organizations that are feeding the homeless, for instance. And it helped make that happen in a better way. That play did that. And so there are ways that you can do that through the theater, but the play itself is dealing with how the policies are operating deeply in the lives of people. Because, you know, the actor can't play capitalism.
Right.
You know, capitalism is a thing, not a person.
Mm-hmm.
The actor can play, you know, the parent who is so deeply enmeshed in capitalism that the most important thing in their life is making money. And because of that, they're not parenting, for instance.
Mm. Yeah, thinking about everything you've just said regarding legislative theater and the two productions that you've just spoken of, and wondering what we're going to do in a course that I'm teaching at a local prison, Racine Correctional Institution, medium security prison for men, where I have three college students from campus joining 15 incarcerated students, and the topic is restorative justice. And our goal is to perform a play, a forum theater play, for stakeholders, meaning legislators, prison administrators, whoever we can get to attend, probably virtually, some of them, and just to wrestle that into something that speaks of the men's experience. Is it's a bear, and we're in the middle of it right now.
Well, I did that in Auckland.
Oh, well, tell us.
In Para Moreno Prison, the maximum security prison in Auckland.
Okay.
Working with prisoners, inmates.
Mm.
And they made two plays, three plays. It's a while ago now.
Mm-hmm.
One of the plays was about how, you know, when you come into prison, the crime that you're there for is supposed to be confidential.
Mm.
And the guards have a legal obligation to keep that confidential, and they don't sometimes. Mm. They don't because it's a way to punish you.
Mm.
And so one of the plays was about that.
Okay.
Another play was about loneliness and depression in prison. I'm remembering correctly, where this character has spent a lot of time in isolation. Has become disenfranchised from his family.
Mm-hmm.
And the play ends with a suicide.
Oof.
Now, in my work, I don't make the plays.
Mm-hmm.
They made these plays.
Yeah. You know,
just like your experience.
Right.
The group comes with a rough, really rough piece. And my job is then to get inside that with them and make it work. Mm-hmm. As theater, but to stay as true as possible to what they've made.
Mm.
And, you know, that will mean, often it means editing.
Yeah.
You know, because people, they've brought stuff where there's a lot of explaining going on by the characters. And, you know, there's a rule in theater, stop explaining, do.
Yeah.
Theater's about action, psychological action, emotional action, physical action.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we made those plays work, and they were very, very powerful.
Mm. Fantastic. Well, I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah, because right now it's in the muddy middle, but I appreciate hearing your stories. They're inspiring and help give me some energy to stay in the fight.
So I'm pretty sure I have a written report about that.
Oh, well, I'd love to see
privately.
That. Okay. I will remind you of that.
Okay.
So you recently toured Europe for 9 weeks. What the heck was that about?
Well, it's funny. The last time I was in Europe was 2019, but before COVID. And I was telling people that because of the climate issue, I thought it was the last time I would be in Europe. And at that time, oh, a good half dozen, all young people, said to me, "Well, what do you think is better? You come to Europe or 10 of us go to Vancouver?" And I hadn't thought about that that way. But I don't want to make that travel to do a 1 week gig. I can't justify the flight that way. And so what I do is, if an invitation comes, and the first invitation came from a company in Biel, Switzerland, and I said, "Okay, well, I'll put word out and we'll see." And so I put word out because there's a network now in Europe, and all these invitations came, and I had to learn. I have to learn a lesson, actually, because usually there's seven things that come, and four or five of them are going to be real. And this time they were all real, and I ended up saying yes to all of them, and it was long. It was a lot. And I'm, as my mother used to say, not a spring chicken anymore. It was a lot. And so there, it was most, a lot of it was running training workshops. So there was a 6 day, like a level one that you did training workshop in Biel, Switzerland, that people came to from all over Switzerland. And then evening event in Bern, called Reclaiming Hope from a Culture of Fear. Then an evening event in Zurich, Getting Beyond Us and Them. These evening events are, they're like 3 hours long. People come, and the entire evening comes out of the audience. There's no play, no actors, no. And then a 10-day training. I'm trying to bring the levels one and two together into one longer session. A 10-day training in Vienna that was full months before it happened. That people came from all over Austria and Germany, and other parts of Europe, and somebody came from Canada. And then, because it was so full, another level one training in just outside Schreibersdorf in southern Austria. And then back to Vienna to make plays on the climate issue that were very, very powerful. And then to Würzburg, Germany, to do a 3 day workshop on Getting Beyond Us and Them. And then to Pamplona, Spain, to do a 3 day workshop on issues around belonging and then home.
Whoa. And how long have you been home now?
About 2 weeks.
Okay. And as you said just before we went on air, you're just now feeling like you're back.
Yeah. It takes a while.
To
And
settle in.
on November 4, I'm leaving for Kelowna to do a power play, a week-long process with an Indigenous health authority.
Kelowna.
Kelowna. Oh, it's a 5 hour drive into the interior here. On issues around speaking up inside the medical structure.
Fantastic. So, always busy. Are you going to be doing this till you drop, or do you have another? Do you have a
Well, that could be
encore career?
tomorrow. Who knows? It's not a job. And while I have a lesson to l learn about not accepting too much work, I do love my work. It's, I've been very, very lucky. There is a 6-year-old alive and well in here who just wanted things to be fair. And then discovered the theater later on in life and managed to turn those things into a career, making theater about human rights issues. Like, I've been, really lucky. And it's a tremendous privilege to be invited all over the place to do this. So,
Who knows? Maybe someday you'll get an invitation from Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Who knows? Although it is hard for me to enter the States to work.
Why is that?
Because they want me to have a very, very expensive visa.
Oh.
It costs $5,000 to get.
What?
It's I can't remember the exact, it's something like an extraordinary talented alien. I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's because the idea is I will be taking work away from somebody.
Oh, I see.
We let you folks come to Canada all the time.
Right.
But
I did not know this. This is
you have to, don't tell anybody this, but you have to kind of come in under the radar.
Okay. I won't tell anybody. we have 1 minute left. So we blew through this time and I thought we would. We could easily talk for another 2 hours, but do you have a final thought for, put you on the spot here, educators who might be wondering the relevance or utility of your work? I know of it firsthand, so I could speak to that. But you have, many of your trainees have been educators, are educators, right?
Yeah.
And what do you know from that in terms of the value of the work?
What I'm doing is not rocket science.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, you know, the making of the plays is more complicated, but the basic building block of this is what's called image theater.
Mm.
And that's asking somebody to, using other people's bodies in the room and themselves, to make a frozen image, a tableau of something out of their life that they've struggled with. And in my work, they never have to explain it.
Mm.
I'm more interested in the room's perceptions of that story,
mm-hmm,
than getting into a psychoanalysis in a therapeutic sense of the story.
Mm.
It is theater. And anybody can do this anywhere.
And it's a way of entering into dialogue.
Exactly. That's exactly where I was going.
Yes.
Because in the world we're living in today, actual dialogue has become very difficult. There is a difference between me disagreeing with you and me disrespecting you.
Mm.
The fact that I don't agree doesn't mean I'm being disrespectful. Although one can disagree disrespectfully, that's also possible. But when you're inviting people to do embodied work and take on just the physical shape of different characters in a difficult frozen scenario,
mm-hmm,
what you're doing, and you're asking them to speak sentences from inside that shape, you're getting many, many different perspectives on a particular moment. And that's taking you into an actual dialogue about how different people from different lives who have different eyes and ears see, interpret the same moment in a very human way that is not confrontational.
Mm.
And it opens up territory inside anywhere, a classroom, a workplace, a family, to be able to talk about things that are maybe have always been difficult to talk about, but in the polarized world we're living in today, and I know in the United States you are dealing with this, it's an access, it's a doorway, because it's art.
Wonderful. Well, that's a beautiful note to end on. And thank you so much, David Diamond, for being with us here today. David Diamond, Director of Theatre for Living in Vancouver, Canada, and internationally, has been our guest today. This is WGTD Radio. I'm Jonathan Shaler, and this is Education Matters. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
I'm Gregory Berg. The studios of WGTD will be closed on Monday because of the holidays, so there will be no morning show broadcast.